Hello, and welcome to this edition of the EV Revolution Show audio podcast. With your host, Kenneth Bocor. This is episode 61, recorded on July 18th, 2025. This episode of the EV Revolution Show is sponsored by File Sanctuary. Need a great web host for your business? Need to get email at yourdomain.com? They provide professional, feature-rich web and email hosting for any project you have in mind. Get started today at filesanctuary.net/cloud and save 10% with promo code EVRevShow. All right, and welcome to this edition of the EV Revolution Show. My name is Kenneth Bocor, your host, as you heard. Thanks very much for tuning in. It's been a while since I've done an audio podcast. I apologize for being negligent on that. I've just been so busy. And, you know, folks, I always say I'm trying to find smart people to talk to. And sometimes it's hard to find smart people to talk to in this day and age. But I'm very lucky and privileged to be at the offices of a company called Clockwork Energy. I'm speaking to Andrea Curry, who's the founder and CEO, and Jen Buchanan, who's the founder and COO of Clockwork Energy. How are you, ladies?
Good morning.
Great. Yeah, great to see you.
I love the stereo, ladies. I love it. It's great. Excellent. Thank you very much for inviting me to come out and chat with you folks and visit your establishment. For people listening, we met a few weeks ago at another meeting, and it was interesting, some conversations that we had. So I thought, I think this would be good to get their messaging out to you folks and just to understand other things that are going on in the EV market space and the landscape besides all the FUD that you're seeing on online these days. So we're deep bringing a different perspective. So let's start, whoever wants to start off with maybe introducing the organization to the listeners. Or both.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So our company is called Clockwork. We are a software company and we make reliability software essentially for the electric vehicle charging industry. So for those of you out there that are EV drivers, you probably, you know, pulled up to the pump, if you will, plugged in, had some frustrating experiences where you're maybe plugging in, unplugging, plugging in, unplugging many times to get a charge, or the charger's been down, but you haven't known it necessarily, or you're expecting to get 50 kilowatts and you're getting 20 kilowatts or whatever have you, so it takes you three times as long. Our software essentially helps the operators of those stations be aware of those kinds of issues, diagnose the issues and proactively resolve them so that when you pull up to the pump, the chargers are working every time. So our objective really is first charge success. Mm-hmm. So making sure that as EV drivers, that infrastructure that we've all been putting in the ground for, you know, quite a few years, that it's operating to a level that we've come to expect really from gas stations.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. I mean, I'm not sure how good of a business model that is, because my understanding is everything's great, peachy, and perfect in the EV environment, right, folks? We never have problems charging. We never have reliability. No, I'm just kidding. Absolutely, it's well needed. I mean, certainly in the early days, we were talking just before I pressed the record button about some of the, you know, the early Nissan Leafs and some of the challenges that some vehicles had a decade or so ago. So definitely, it was a different ball game there, and those pioneers who adopted EVs then were certainly pioneers in trying to get places. But you know, maybe Jen, you could comment on, have you seen a really viable progression in reliability in that market space over the last decade or so? And, you know, where are some of the weaknesses that still can occur today?
I think it's evolved quite a bit over the last few years. Like, we're still in the early days. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a few years ago, it was around range anxiety of could I, you know, get to where I need to go? Will my car get me where I need to go? And the cars have evolved significantly. I don't think anybody would debate that. And the variety of cars that are available, and, you know, you've got upwards of pretty easily 400 to 500 kilometers of range. It is reliability now. Like, the chargers are in the ground. You can get from your road tripping, get from A to B. Will those chargers be working, I think, is where the evolution is now. And that is really where we got to with Clockwork, as we were driving, doing our research and testing, it wasn't around, we had a great car that we were driving. There's great cars that are out there. It was around, is that one charger at that one small town, is it going to be working as we continue and drive from, you know, the location that we need to get to? So I think the evolution is happening.
Yes.
It's happening really quickly, but we're still in the young days. Everybody is doing the best they can with the technology that we have, and that evolution is continuing to roll.
Yeah, you know, and taking Tesla aside, because they are a unique player in the charging market space, because they're the only OEM that manufactures and delivers and maintains their own charging network in association with their vehicles, right? That was an Elon mantra way back when, if I build it, they will come kind of thing. And that was a smart move. So taking them aside, because we know that their reliability is quite high, I try to vocalize Tesla charge superchargers as the Walmart of chargers, because they, when they build them, they build a lot in one spot, not like two or four or six. Yep. They're building upwards of 10 or 20 or more. So even if one or two go down, you still have a fair number of units that are available. And they're very quick to repair those, because to them, it's a moneymaker. It's part of their bottom line. And they want to continue to promote vehicle sales by having reliable charging to back it up and putting it everywhere. So taking those guys aside, you've got a myriad of other providers. If we focus on North America specifically, in different regions, some are stronger, some are weaker. But even as you said, Jen, even today, there still is reliability issues with even premier vendors. And I'll pick on, you know, Electrify America, Electrify Canada as an example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a company that spent a lot of money after Dieselgate to fix up a lot of problems and to better themselves. But I know that I can drive up to one locally, and there's four stations, and one of them will probably be down. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. There's a good chance. So why is that? What are some of these things that impact reliability? And
yeah.
Either of you.
Ladies, yeah, I can jump in. So, I mean, I think that is a great example. I think operators, for the most part today, are all trying to do the best they can. I think we're... You know, there were some early operators who really didn't care about EV charging, kind of put it in as lip service, and those are kind of one category. When you think about, like, the Electrified Canadas of the world, it really is that they're almost like looking through a keyhole, if I date myself by using, I know we don't have keys anymore, but
yeah.
At what's happening with their charging network, right?
Yeah.
And they're not seeing the whole picture. So the data feed that they get is very, very limited. And so that data feed often tells them, you know, the charger is up, like that I'm able to communicate with the charger. And that's not really indicative of whether a human can charge or not, whether a driver at the charger can actually plug in and get that charge, especially the first time.
So it's more like a heartbeat, or, you know, like mm-hmm. a ping.
It is exactly a heartbeat.
I'm getting a response, yep. But that's all so I know mm-hmm. it's on and up, but I don't know what else is going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And so so those heartbeats can be successful, mm-hmm. those pings can be successful, but still a driver is unable to charge. And so what our software does is monitor all the things around that. So sort of open the door, if you mm-hmm. will, instead of peering through the keyhole, and see all the things we need to see to really know what's happening for the driver experience, essentially. And then because we have all that data, then our diagnostic algorithms can pull that together and build a picture of what's really happening at that charger. Whether that's based on something categorically telling us, you know, maybe the internet signal is really weak and we can see that, or maybe there's an electrical, you know, component that's overloaded and we can see that. But it also can just be the pattern. So you can think about, you know, every charger is having a typical behavior, like some patterns around when it gets used, how it gets used, how the mm-hmm. charges happen. And you know, we're at the point now where with enough data, you can really understand when there's an anomaly in that pattern. So part of what we do is just see, this charger is acting a little funny today, or that's not our typical behavior. Now let's run some more diagnostic tests and figure out if there's actually a problem at the charger, or it's just an anomaly of a day, if you will. And so those are the kinds of things that we're providing to the operator. So now they can kind of like open that door, get the full picture, understand specifically what is wrong, and be proactive about it. Because no good network wants you as a driver to pull up and have a terrible experience. Honestly, the majority of incidents they're finding out about with drivers calling today. And think about if you pull up to, you know, in your example, there's, you know, maybe 8 ports of charging. You pull up, the first one's not working, you go to the second, you don't bother to report that the first one's not working. Like, you got your charge, your time is valuable, you move on. So oftentimes they're going days, weeks, months, just with unreported issues out there. And so Clockwork is really about, you know, making sure that we're not relying on drivers to do our jobs for us. Like, we're collecting the full data, we're diagnosing the issues, and then proactively, you know, sending the right texts or taking the right actions to resolve those issues.
If you look at, like, the industry stat currently of 25% chargers being down on average, and then a 6 to 8 week time to get them resolved and back up and running, mm-hmm. it's because of what Andrea's saying, that they don't actually necessarily see exactly what's mm-hmm. going on, and they don't know. And 25% down, that is not reliable. If you're a driver, yeah. that's not acceptable.
If a driver calls today and says, hey, you know, there's a problem, or they, you know, report the problem on PlugShare or what have you, and they say, you know, there's a challenge with this charger, that's now really all the data that the operator has to then resolve it. So their first point of action is to send a tech to the site with no information. So if something's wrong at this site, can you go take a look? So the techs are showing up not even knowing what to look for, not even knowing what the problem is. Oftentimes they're not even driving an EV. So then we get it, and that's where the 6 to 8 weeks comes in. Now I've gone 2, 3, 4 trips trying to solve this issue. I think I've solved it many times. No one can categorically know. And that just goes on you know.
And the expense then just goes up and up and up for maintaining that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I know reliability. A lot of the vendors of the charging EVSEs will blame, you know, the units that they have, whether they're Schneider or whoever, you know, units, and say, well, I can't get parts, you know, it takes me 2 months to get parts. And we know post-COVID there's been challenges with supply chain, things like that, and now we have tariffs and all these other things to worry about, so who knows how that's going to impact that reliability. But it's interesting, yeah, you know, to send a technician and they have to pull out their you know, basic playbook and start from scratch, you know, level one diagnosis and go from there, not having that intel. So wouldn't you have thought, though, that those providers would kind of understand that model and build solutions for that?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up an interesting point about kind of the Tesla network, I mm-hmm. think, because Tesla has the advantage of owning everything in the network, right? So the hardware, the software, the car, and how they perform with other cars is maybe not as great as how they perform with their own cars.
But they're just saying, we're going to give you X anyway if you don't have a Tesla. You'll pay more for it. But the integration with them is key still. The telemetry and all the ads, you know, the advantages that now they're going to build in a queuing system, I'm understanding. So when you show up and it's busy, you'll have a number. You won't have to be fighting for, you know, in line. So they're an anomaly, though.
And I think they have fewer variables to solve for and lots of money to solve for the variables, because they're not just making money on the charging, they're also making money on the car, and they have a lot of levers. For everyone else, there can be hundreds of variables. And so what often happens is really a finger-pointing game of, like, oh, it's the hardware, oh, it's the software, oh, it's the car, and nobody, you know, so now the operator's kind of stuck in this position of, you know, having all those entities face off with one another, and nobody's really working, except for the operator themselves, to figure it out and solve the problem. So we end up with this exercise of kind of, you know, oh, it's the hardware, oh, it's the software. And so, you know, it really is about having that data to understand categorically what's wrong. And then in terms of, like, the parts and the backlog thing, that is a piece of it. And, you know, we can't make parts necessarily show up faster. We don't go that far, at least not yet. But what we can do is tell you what are the likely issues as you look at your network, so you can plan ahead with your suppliers and your vendors to make sure, oh, I'm working with these technicians. It looks like, you know, this piece of equipment is these, you know, power modules, for example. There are some, you know, poor power modules out there and some. Yep. So maybe we need to start stocking those power modules, and how do I get that, you know, relationship in place? So at least now you're, you know, very easily able to see, you know, hardware, software, firmware, you know, different components, telephony, whatever it is, like, what are my key problems and how do I start planning for those problems ahead of time?
Interesting.
Yeah.
What have you seen so far for the non-Tesla providers, the non-supercharger elements in North America? What are maybe the top 5 kind of issues that they're coming up with that, you know, users may not be aware of? So I would think maybe, you know, car communication might be up there because of so many new cars coming, and maybe they haven't, you know, finalized the software, and then some of them are plug and charge capable, some of them are other standards. Yep. You know, I think everybody's trying to move to one standard now. But you know, do you have like a top five that you might have seen so far that you could rank?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like interoperability is what you're talking about. So interoperability is, you know, a challenge, whether it's, you know, like the car has a firmware, you have your cloud software, and you have your charger firmware. All of those things, those versions need to work together. And in many networks, they can be upgraded willy-nilly by various third parties. So you may, as an operator, may not even know, you know, your hardware is getting a firmware upgrade, for example. So if any of those things get out of sync, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Mercedes doesn't charge on, you know, the Parkland network, for example. So, although Parkland's really great, so that was not
just an example.
Just an example. It's not a plug-in. So yeah, so so anyway, you definitely have interoperability issues. Connectivity is a massive issue. Mm-hmm. So the handshakes between these things can take a second or two.
Yeah.
And so if you have spotty either cellular, Wi-Fi, you know, Ethernet connectivity, then, you know, packets corrupt, and that's why you see that plug in, unplug situation. So that is an issue. Vandalism is an issue. Like, we've all pulled up chargers where a cable's been cut, and credit card readers are scratched onto payment. So for, you know, a number of different things can affect, you know, the tap to pay and other problems. I'm sure we've all been in that situation where our tap to pay doesn't work. And then you're kind of up, I would say, to like more common hardware issues.
Whether they're environmental or whether they're equipment related or a combination of factors.
Different hardwares have kind of different common issues and faults, I would say.
One of the things that we've recently spun up, because we've got our software that we're working with networks, and it is different per site of what those top issues are. So we've created a reliability index that is, it sits outside of our software, and it's really meant to support operators if they've got sites and they're like, it's something's not right, it's not, you know, the reliability is not there, it looks like it is, we're getting the heartbeats, but our drivers are calling in. We're doing those assessments for operators at the site level to give them a really good view of what are the top three things that if you just fix these three things, what would elevate you back up to a first charge success for your drivers. Because it's everything that Andrea is talking about, but it's also sometimes the like driver error because the signage is poorly done, or that big red button looks like that's how they, you know, stop the charge and they're hitting it.
Yeah.
We can tell all of that. We can see what's actually happening at that site and share that back in a way that they don't have that visibility today. So that's another piece that we've got.
That's excellent. And those are things that I wouldn't have thought of. So, you know, signage and this kind of stuff. You're right, because as somebody that's had an EV for a number of years, it's, you know, we're used to knowing what to look for, and everybody may implement it slightly different, but there's a commonality factor to that. But as we try to grow EV adoption, a lot of people are first timers, right?
They're
going to take that plunge. And, you know, one thing, again, I'll go back to Tesla, and I'm not a commercial for Tesla. Get me wrong, folks. I appreciate what they're doing. But, you know, they're kind of like the staples of EVs. They're the easy button, right? They just give you a car. Don't worry about when to charge and how long and where to stop. The car will tell you. You just plug in, go grab your coffee. The car will do everything. It'll stop when it needs to, blah, 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 blah. So, the users, like, we don't really think about it. Like, I can, if I want to go to LA tomorrow, I'll go. I mean, it's that easy, right? Their network. But beyond that, all the other manufacturers, it's a bit more challenging. I am seeing better integration of predictive analysis now. I just had a Volvo EX90 a few weeks ago that is using the Google, of course, and now they're able to do fairly accurate predictive analysis. So if I route LA, it will tell me it's 18 stops.
Yeah.
And each stop you'll get there with this state of charge, and you'll need to spend 22 minutes and then go to the next one at this, and so on and so forth, which only Tesla was doing just a short few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are seeing that, and then mapping in those providers as well. I know that can be a bit of a challenge, is having all that accurate data, because providers are lighting up and maybe taking down points you know, all the time. So I don't know how accurate those databases could be, but that goes beyond though. Again, you're able to find additional information for those providers in a unique sense that they may not get other than just, well, there's a heartbeat and I look at plug and share and we're getting, you know, twos on plug and share. So why is that, right? So so obviously you guys have this software, you're continuing to build out on it and refine it and add more functions and features. You have some clients to date already that you're dealing with, and you're able to not talk about who those clients are, but these examples that you're giving us today are from, you know, what you're seeing from these clients, correct? And what's the feedback that you're hearing and seeing so far as you go out to market with this?
So feedback, and it's so rewarding to hear it from the operators that are in the trenches watching the chargers on a daily basis. So historically, they're trying to track all these things that Andrew is talking about, all the things that can go wrong. They're tracking both in the software, they're looking at their communications, they're looking at power. They're literally working with multiple tabs open to try to see, you know, they might be in Toronto trying to watch chargers all across Canada, and they can only see what they can pull up one site at a time, one charger at a time. They're looking for those problems. So when they start using Clockwork and they're getting a full view of all of their chargers, and it's literally serving up, you've got a you know, something you need to look at here, and this is what we're seeing, this is the problem, and it's really saving, we've been told that it's saving a couple hours per day for the operators that are really watching the chargers, and they know exactly where they need to be doing a remote restart, what that looks like, or whether they're actually sending out a truck, and what are they sending the truck with? Is it a, you know, is it an electrician? Is it a technician? What parts do they need, that they've got far more information to work with?
That's great.
And I think operators who stepped into this, you know, like all new spaces, I think had a business model of what it would take to support these networks, and then ended up spending like five times what they were planning to spend on supporting these networks. Yeah. And so what Clockwork is doing really is bringing that spending back in line with their intention. And that's meaningful for them because they want to be focused on growing their networks and making their business models work. And if you're spending all your time firefighting and just trying to keep the lights on, that's, you know, very difficult to do. So we're really helping them to unlock their capital and grow their businesses on what their business model should be, not, you know, what it kind of has become for them to, you know, have people manually monitoring plug share and manually, you know, monitoring all these different networks and so on. So
it was like one of the employees that was part of their daily task is to monitor plug share like all day every day to see what's going on, like that's a
or
lot.
Other social media as well,
you know, Google, the reuse, all of it. There's a better way than that.
Absolutely, they're important, but
they're
to your
important
point, from a business model perspective, you'd rather be proactive on this than reactive as much as you can.
Right.
So if you're getting data analysis to say, you know, again, you're seeing patterning, you're seeing similarities, you're seeing, you know, this particular unit has a power module problem after so many hours or in these situations, then those providers can start planning for that. They can start stocking, they can start doing these things in an efficient business model, because carrying inventory is not efficient unless you're using it, right?
Yeah, instead of having 10 tabs open, if you could have one spot that has all of the integrations, all of the data coming in one place, and then using the predictive analytics that you were talking about, as well as AI, to serve up.
I was going to ask you about AI.
To serve that up, but also using that to say, these are the things that need to happen to resolve this. Mm-hmm. Like, whether we're automating that resolution, or whether, no, you need somebody on site.
So have you deployed some AI in your software for some of those predictive work? Yeah. Okay.
So RI is really around the machine learning side of understanding, you know, that pattern-based, like, what is wrong, if you will. So we rely very heavily on the data for that to build those algorithms. And then where we're, and this might be getting a little bit technical, but where we have the, you know, the text going to site piece, then we have a closed loop from a feedback standpoint in terms of, you know, so say we told a tech that it was a power module and we sent them out there with a new power module, and then they got there and we're like, oh, it was actually just the connector. So that data is coming back. So our algorithms get smarter and smarter over time, if you will, because we have that mm-hmm. closed loop feedback mechanism coming back and just telling us, oh, no, you were wrong, or right. no, you were right. So kind of classic machine learning.
Do you pull some data from the actual vendors of the EVSEs as well, as far as, you know, what some of their troubleshooting, what some of their yes. potential like things that they've seen, and maybe some of their gear?
So the fault codes, mm-hmm. you yeah. know, like all mm-hmm. those, kind, okay. all that kind of information from the vendors, yep. like site information, right. all that kind of stuff.
Because you're totally vendor agnostic. You don't care 100%. Who they are, what equipment they're running, how they're doing it. You're operating in a very similar manner that you're going to find this additional data that they don't have today mm-hmm. Beyond the basic parameters, and give them that intellectual, you know, observations and knowledge to be able to make better business decisions, keep a network more reliable, yeah. keep the service levels higher, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. And like, to the hardware provider's credit too, like, they want to know typically when they have a problem. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the finger pointing exercise can be exhausting as an operator, but it can be just as exhausting for a hardware or software provider, where they're yes. constantly like, I don't think it's me, but is it me? Yeah. And so for someone to be like, no, you have this problem, or, you know, there's a bug in this software, and that's typically appreciated, mm-hmm. Because the problem for them is spending so much time trying to figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. So we're figuring it out.
Are finding that with all of the pieces of the puzzle, they all want to know, like, that when they're finger pointing, it's not because they don't want to deal with it. They literally aren't quite clear on what is. So mm-hmm. we've been asked a few times, can you look at this specific, like, there's something, we're seeing it, but could you take a look at it? Mm-hmm. And we can get to the bottom of what's really happening.
Interesting. I got two final questions to ask. One is going to be going backwards, and I think you touched upon it a little bit, Jen, at the beginning, but, you know, the incubus for how you guys got going on this. Like, you know, you have backgrounds in other areas, if I remember correctly, software and other organizations, but what was, you know, the reasoning to get into this? Did you rent an EV and have a bad experience, if I remember, or?
All of the above.
So my background is, I've been in the tech world since, you know, graduation. Maybe three years ago.
Yeah. A few years yeah. ago.
And Andrea and I worked yeah. together at a former company. Mm-hmm. And that was a great, you know, partnership and experience yeah. working together. And Andrea has a long background in clean tech. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know what, like, we need to do something that pays it forward. Like, what can we do at this point in our career that is something that we're passionate about, that we care about? And Andrea has a lot of background in the clean tech and EV space, and that was the direction that we started going in. And we decided that, you know what, like, as product people, let's put our money mm-hmm. where our mouth is. And we started a road trip across Canada mm-hmm. in an EV. We were fortunate to be sponsored by Volkswagen Vancouver with a brand new ID4, and we started at mile zero in Victoria yep. and started the drive across to see what is the charging experience for non-Tesla folks yeah. that really will make a difference in, you know, environmentally and with our carbon footprint. And it became really quickly obvious that the issue wasn't having the chargers available, it was making sure the chargers were up and running, reliable. We had, I don't know if you want to share the story of...
Brooks, Alberta. Mm-hmm. I was on a call with an investor and, you know, just minding my own business in the front. And this was like the one, like, there was one charger there, one mm-hmm. DCFC charger mm-hmm. at a SureStay with a Denny's. I still remember the place.
At least you could get
pancakes
while you're waiting.
And Jen, like, I could just see her yeah. getting more and more and more stressed because yeah. she was pretty sure at one point we were going to be staying at this SureStay trickle charging out of the hotel
for a couple days.
Eating pancakes as she was like plugging in, unplugging. Yeah. And so the single point of failure of that was, you know, quite mm-hmm. disturbing. And so, you know, and I'd been an EV driver for a while and Jen was new at it. And I think it was yeah. a rude awakening there of like, wow, this is, you know, can be quite a challenge and is a really meaty area for us to resolve. And then I think we also, when we started out, we were I had been putting chargers in the ground for a while, and we wanted to help people buy smarter and kind of avoid some of these issues. And we kind of thought maybe that's how we'll help people. And so we were part of a bunch of different initiatives. And one initiative that we still support is an Indigenous-owned national charging network.
Great.
And we couldn't leave, like, we couldn't transition those projects into operation mode in kind of the state of things. And we started shopping for this before we started, you know, before we decided to build it. We started looking around and trying to figure out, like, who's really solving the problem in the right way. You know, we, coming from a tech background, you know, if you think about using, like, your Facebooks, your Amazons, like, the margin for downtime in mine and Jen's world is, like, 0.0001%, right, that you're kind of allowed. So the fact that it could be 25% was just devastating to us. So we thought, no, like, there has to be an answer here. And we got a great team together with a bunch of really smart engineers from the industry who were also very passionate about solving this, and kind of started Clockwork and just really committed to, I would say, leveling up the industry and just, you know, bringing some of those expectations that drivers have at the gas stations, expectations that you have at Amazon, and the technologies that come to bear to make that happen, you know, happen for EV.
It's interesting how society has evolved and the expectation world word that you use, because we are in that world of instant gratification and high expectations that it's just going to work.
Yeah.
Like, if it doesn't, then why are you even doing it kind of thing? There's
right.
no forgiveness at all from a consumer perspective. And I will gladly go right away to the next site. If I'm not getting it here, I'm off and I'm not coming back, most likely. It's a totally different environment. So for those operators, it's critical to have those success levels that you guys can help bring them. And on a forward question, so my last question then, if we're putting on your crystal balls and looking at where this industry is going in the next 5 to 10 years, I mean, besides how EV sales are going, they're still going to continue to climb, there's still going to be movement. You know, this whole transition is a decades long. There are going to be gas cars around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do need more sustainable transportation. How do you see this environment shaping out in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years? What's some of the thinking there?
I mean, I do think...
I have no idea. That's why I'm asking.
Nearer term, I think plug and charge has to happen. Uh-huh. Like, you've made reference to plug and charge a couple of times. Like, you know, for... People aren't going to download, I don't think, 100 different apps right. and load $20 onto all the apps or even the tap and pay. Like, I just think it makes sense. You should be able to pull up, plug in, and have that all happen. So I do see, like, a lot of advancements on that interoperability. I mean, I do think we're going to see a lot more chargers go in the ground, and people are going to start to build that confidence that, you know, it's there, just like we've built that confidence over time in the gas infrastructure.
And you don't get those choke points like you talked about before, where, you know, there's only one in
Brooks, Alberta.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was a while ago.
Sorry,
I
mean, Brooks.
I know there's another
example
a couple of years ago in Ontario that was a choke point along the Trans-Canada. But, you know, hopefully they're fixing that. So obviously, you know, I totally agree the convenience factor of payment, standardizing on that, because that is a problem I hear from a lot of people. The more propagation of those chargers. What else? Anything?
What is it that I would love to see? Like, I mean, I'm blessed. I've got a garage. I've got a great level 2 charger. Call it to Grizzly. Yeah. Love my charger.
There you go.
For folks that are in condos, that are in apartment buildings, I would love to see chargers at places of business where people are working. That it's like part of your benefit package. The joy of getting up every day and having a ready-to-go car is, I think if you're not an EV driver, you don't understand how great the charging experience is. It's, you know, it's that 5% when you're doing a longer road trip or on the highway. So I would hope to see the chargers for on-street charging. You'd see more, that there is more within businesses, that it's just part of what people have access to with the chargers going in the ground.
And then I think, like, if you look a little longer term, like, I do think we're going to get to megawatt charging, faster charge rates. Like, it is going to be that convenience. We just need to be picking away, you know, choosing a problem and picking away at that problem bit by bit as an industry. And you know, any industry, if you look back, there's always kind of a rocky foundation of different players. But I really think, you know, the convenience of gas stations will be there plus.
Yeah.
And plus there's a whole resilience, like, and an experience driving an electric vehicle that, and I know some people won't agree with me on this, but like, I'll never go back. Like I say that probably, who knows, but I will, I can't imagine wanting to sit here in Ontario on the 401 in traffic in a gas car again with like fumes and noise and all these things when I'm happily sitting in there with my podcast and my completely quiet environment, like clean air, all these things. Like, and I was sitting in my backyard with my husband this summer. And we live fairly near to Highway 85 here. And in the morning, you can really hear the traffic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, imagine there's going to be a day where we sit back here and it's going to be quiet.
That's right.
Like, maybe imagine.
Maybe low UFO sound or something like that.
Like, you know? low hum.
Yeah. I love that vision.
And I was like, that will be for everybody who lives along the highway, especially ones mm-hmm. who didn't sign up for that, who maybe live there generationally and then someone put in a highway in their backyard. Like, you're going to get your backyard back.
I can hear the 401 from where I live.
Yeah.
We have a major highway next to where we are too. And especially in the summer when the motor is a long straightaway and the motorcycles just gun it because the police aren't going to catch them. So they just open up and you hear them. Oh, 10 o'clock at night, there goes another swarm.
What do you think in 10 years?
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think all of what you said as well, certainly that gas station experience, right, from a charging, I don't think we need to be exactly there because I think people are overrating that I'm only in and out in 5 minutes. I think most people that are road tripping are stopping longer than 5 minutes.
Agreed. 100%.
If you have a case of, I got to get their itis, then don't get an EV. Like, you know, get a Porsche and off you go, a gas Porsche and go. But just the mechanics of getting out, pumping, and then going to the washroom, getting a coffee or whatever, it's more than 5 minutes at any stop. So to get to that 15-minute experience even, or 10-minute, is we're not that far away.
Yeah.
You know, we know technologies like solid state and megawatt faster charging, and you know, the use of materials to allow the power to flow better, you know, like less reliance on cobalt and mm-hmm. others to not inhibit that flow, so that I can I can stream 500 kilowatts into the battery at once, you know, rather than 150 if I'm lucky. So all those technologies are happening, but I think it's all geared towards the user experience. So and do we need to go past that? Probably not. Like, you know, we don't need like 2 megawatts or 3. I don't need, you know, a 2-minute charge. I mean, and I remember days people, I need 1,000-kilometer charge. Do you really? Like, you know, if you do, then get a diesel and have fun with it, you know, like.
Yeah, not if you got 2 kids and a dog.
No,
like,
exactly. Yeah, for me, it's never been range anxiety. It's been bladder anxiety. So, you know, when you get over 40.
I drove home from the Peterborough area just last week, and we stopped at Parkland and Whitby.
Yeah.
It was 20 minutes, you know, 2 bathroom stops for the people in the car, get a coffee, and good to go. Like, it was perfect.
And it just fits into the routine. You don't even, like, sometimes when I stop and I get out and, I'm done already? Like, I have to hurry back to the car because it's done, and I'm not even done my rest stop yet.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So I think all those are going to happen, and that whole, everything combined will just prove to the consumer marketplace that reliability and that it really is a good story. It shouldn't be a barrier to EV adoption, the charging. So I think we've overcome range now. I think we've overcome charging to a degree. We can still work on that, what you guys are doing. I think from a choice, we have a much more choice. I started following the marketplace in 2016, and there were a handful of vendors making products. Now there's dozens and dozens, and I keep a spreadsheet of Canadian MSRPs, and it's, I think, 190 lines long of models and trims of all electric, not even plug-in hybrids. So there's a lot of choice for consumers, and more comes. I do hope we see some lower cost. I do hope the costs continue. We're almost at cost parity, but we're not there. I'd love to see maybe the government allow somebody to come in at a sub 40 or a sub 30K price point.
Agreed.
That nobody's playing in and nobody wants to play in today from the major OEMs. I'd like to see that, to be able to propagate out for people that don't want to spend 60 or 50 or whatever K on an EV. And just for folks listening, you know, the average price of a new light duty vehicle in Canada is almost $70,000. And that's across the board. That's not just electrics, that's gas and everything. So $70,000 is the average price, and that's where people, there's a lot of EVs you can get under $70,000 from a choice. So, but we still need more. So there's a lot of movement happening in the industry to create this almost perfect storm and to help EV adoption. So any final comments or thoughts that you may not have asked you about or that you want to get out? You guys aren't going IPO anytime soon, but when you do, make sure you think about, you let me know, and is there a website that listeners can go check out and get more information on you guys?
Yeah, great point. Yeah, clockwork.energy mm-hmm. is the website. We're also very present on LinkedIn, share a lot of our thoughts, yeah. Some of the programs that we're involved with. Would love to connect with your audience, mm-hmm. So invite them to reach out and meet with us there.
So don't reach out just to gripe about, Ivy or whoever you want to pick on. That's not what you want consumers to do.
Let us know and do an intro. Like if you're saying, I drive up to the cottage and this charger is never working, let us know. Good. We'd be happy to follow up, have the conversation, give us a story. We'll work on it.
Your consumer watchdog hat.
Yeah,
We also will do the reliability index at no cost this summer. That's something we put out really as a public service because we have the data in our platform and we thought it's kind of a shame that, you have to be our customer first and foremost to figure this out. And so to create awareness, we really want people to understand the challenges at their sites and at a new layer of resolution. So you can get that on the website as well.
Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to lovely and smart ladies. I'm in my glory here today. Speaking to Andrea Curry, one of the founders and CEO, and Jen Buchanan, I had to look over to get your name again, the co-founder and CEO of Clockwork Energy, here based out of Kitchener, lovely Kitchener, Ontario area. I wish you guys the best of success. I will continue to follow. Keep me informed of what's going on, and maybe we'll follow up again in a few months and just try to see how the industry has moved since we last talked. That would be an interesting conversation.
We would love that. Yeah, yes, please.
Keep in touch for sure.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for taking the time out of your busy schedules.
For coming out.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks again for listening, folks. You can email me if you have comments. Email at evrevolutionshow@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at evrevshow. And if you have any suggestions for shows, please let me know. Thanks again for listening, and please, everybody, stay safe. And until the next time, I'll see you when I see you.